For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe if you don't already, as you should also make a one-time or monthly pledge of $5, $10, or $20 to help support our work if you don't already. Also, a hello and Magyar to the viewers in Hungary who've made it number 35 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction, followed by a get off my thermometer in English, because at CDN, we're old enough to remember that summer has always been the hot season in the Northern Hemisphere, and that journalists used to know it. For instance, a writer in Chronicles magazine, this is back in February 1991, was commenting on growing public disorder and observed that, quote, in the 1920s and 1930s, many families habitually slept in Central Park on hot summer nights, even at the Harlem end, end quote. Whereas today it's, quote, dangerous heat dome scorches millions of Americans, end quote, and the map is red, dark red, and very dark red. The temperatures are the same, of course, but now Americans are roasting as the rhetorical flames leap upward. A classic example is the New York Times presenting as breaking news that, quote, New York City hits its hottest temperature in more than a decade. The official temperature gauge in Central Park reached 99 degrees this afternoon for the first time since July 18, 2012, and it could climb even higher, end quote. So, a story that it was at least as hot 10 years ago is turned into something unheard of, complete with could, rather than, as one might once have expected in a newspaper, did. Did being, for instance, Steve Malloy's observation on June 28th that, quote, despite much global warming hysteria, the last 7 days in the U.S. have been slightly cooler than average, end quote. And speaking of dark red scary maps, Britain's Daily Mail wrote, sardonically we assume, that, quote, Brits enjoy sun as experts warn of UK amber heat health alert, end quote, before killing off nearly 600 theoretical people, as in, quote, experts warn nearly 600 could die in England and Wales during the heat wave as temperatures soar to 34 Celsius, end quote. Yeah, experts warn. But soar to 34 Celsius? Only in Britain. Prompting the Babylon Bee headline, sardonically we know, quote, millions of Britons drop dead after seeing strange shiny yellow thing in sky for first time, end quote. Meanwhile, what's with the Globe and Mail, Canada's would-be newspaper of record, emailing us, quote, your guide to a perfect Canadian summer. Across Canada, people are stepping outside to soak up every moment of the season, and we're right there with you, end quote. What? Into the scorching heat of death? Are you mad? Or don't you believe your own news copy? It's enough to make you scream. Speaking of which, we're also old enough to remember a Dave Berg cartoon in Mad Magazine back in the 1970s of a couple staggering along pouring sweat and agreeing that if they hear one more person say that it's not the heat, it's the humidity, they're going to scream. Whereupon someone greets them, says it, they scream, and the perpetrator comments, quote, you know, it's not the heat and it's not the humidity either. It's all that screaming, end quote. And now it's the stupid headlines. In the newsletter, we also comment the new Carney administration in Canada is trying to execute a major turn on policy away from boutique woke interventions to a robust focus on productivity. Unfortunately, the Carney administration in Canada is composed primarily of people, including the Prime Minister, who seem to agree with almost everything that the old Trudeau administration did, right down to a freeze on protesters' bank accounts using massively excessive emergency powers that were subsequently ruled illegal. And now, the Carney people have put on a remarkable twister performance by moving to ram through a sweeping Bill C-5 that would suspend a bunch of laws and give Cabinet the power to suspend any others that it felt like in the name of the national interest and getting infrastructure projects built. Which is very much in the spirit of King Henry VIII, and not in a good way. But, having thus crafted a law to prevent any outside groups from being able to veto favored projects, they then forced their own justice minister to grovel and eat his words because he said, correctly but politically incorrectly, that First Nations do not have a veto in such matters. Worse, the Prime Minister himself babbled that on oil and gas projects, quote, we must have a consensus of all the provinces and the Indigenous people, end quote, which is false as a matter of constitutional law and a recipe for paralysis. Then, in an appearance before Canadian senators about this infamous Bill C-5, longtime Minister Dominic LeBlanc, a close Trudeau friend and now Carney's Intergovernmental Affairs Minister, had this miserable exchange with former broadcaster, now Senator Pamela Wallin. She asked, will you grant provinces veto over projects? And he replied, quote, "Whether we give a veto to a particular province, I get that people are looking for absolutes, and they want absolute answers to hypothetical questions," end quote. So she asked, "Is that a veto?" end quote. And he replied, quote, "Veto is the aggressive word you can use. Vito's is also a restaurant on Mountain Road in Moncton," end quote. So if this performance is them getting serious, Canada's in a heap of trouble. And another thing, high-living rich person with a massive climate conscience Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, is getting married again. And nothing says reducing your carbon footprint quite like, what's this? A massive wedding in Venice with hundreds of your nearest, dearest, richest, and most famous people dropping by private jet or in massive diesel yacht, from Oprah Winfrey to Mick Jagger to several Kardashians, and yes, fellow climate maniacal tycoon Bill Gates, and the Queen of Jordan. But don't worry, they're all really, really worried about climate change, and they agree that you should drive an EV and not fly, because nobody really wants you at their she-she event anyway. Then there's Zeke Housefather muffing an attempted dunk on the urban heat island effect with, quote, "There is a long history of papers showing its effect minimal globally, and the world is 70% oceans with no urbanization," end quote. Say, would these be the same oceans with no reliable temperature records until extremely recently, so people like you invent temperatures to fit your theory and call it data? Housefather then cites a source claiming rural stations show a temperature increase of nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the last 40 years, which doesn't use the awkward term airport even once. And then from the unless they don't file, Bloomberg cries, quote, "Natural disasters may be shaping babies' brains. Research on Superstorm Sandy suggests climate crises could affect future generations even if they weren't yet born," end quote. The problem being stress on the mothers. Sorry, pregnant people, though it's hardly worth throwing in that woke term if you already blurted out babies in the womb instead of products of conception, as they had. But if this is really a problem, then isn't sowing panic with wildly exaggerated claims about climate child abuse? Speaking of which, a special in the Globe and Mail asks, quote, "The world is burning, should we tell our kids," end quote. As usual with such tricks, the answer turns out to be no. And the author does not, indeed, tell her 3 and 5-year-old that the world is on fire, perhaps because they would look out the window and go, "Mummy, where are the flames?" Oh, and World Ends, Women and Lunatics Hardest Hit. Scientific alarmism blares, quote, "As heat waves are getting more intense and prolonged, their effect on the mind and body are also becoming more dire. Children and older people, as well as those who work outdoors, are most at risk. So are those with mental health disorders," end quote. Do you mean like the mental health disorder where you obsessively repeat scorch and hottest year ever over and over again? In the newsletter, we also observed that a few months back, The Economist, which used to be an elegant skeptic in suspenders and is now tattooed and backward hatted, explained, quote, how AI could help the climate, end quote. Alas, it's not easy trying to be one of the cool kids. You have to be like totally against climate change, man, except when flying about to live your cool life. And you have to be totally in favor of AI, which after all will never steal your job, just that of the little people you fly over. But AI is incredibly energy intensive. So you also have to say that it will fix climate change by being so AI-y that climate change becomes way less climate changey or something. For instance, AI will help find methane leaks from space, and quote, "other useful applications abound, from breeding heat-resistant crops to designing the materials needed to suck carbon from the air," end quote. So, nothing to see here, folks. Oh wait, there is. Inside Climate News, for instance, reports, quote, "as of early 2025, the United States has more than 5,000 data centers, according to industry reports, compared to around 1,000 just 5 years earlier. And with that increased demand comes an inevitable increased demand for resources," end quote. Especially electricity. But not to worry, AI will save the bees from climate. Yeah, that's the ticket. Bloomberg explains that a cool new robotic beehive is spreading faster than data centers in the U.S. Quote, "roughly 300,000 of these units are in use across the U.S. The U.S. has observed a startling uptick in the number of die-offs since the mid-2000s, as beekeepers have struggled to keep pace with the rise of disease-carrying mites, climate extremes, and other stressors that can wipe out colonies," end quote. And according to Scientific American Email, quote, "if harnessed correctly, AI could slash global climate pollution. Here's how. 3-minute read," end quote. Gad, slash climate pollution, and a mere 3-minute read. unless you ask ChatGPT to turn it into a couple of bullet points so you can get back to being laid back and cool. The actual article says, quote, "The key will be to channel practical AI applications towards key impact areas to accelerate the market adoption rate and efficiency of low-carbon solutions," the study said, noting that governments will have a vital role to play, end quote. Because nothing says smart and efficient like Leviathan lumbering into view asking you to send it a fax. And another thing. With the Northern Hemisphere scorched by the climate catastrophe that people used to welcome under the archaic moniker summer, we are getting something of an accidental demonstration project of the fabled green lack of energy transition. Reuters' Sustainable Switch, also known as the newsletter that still can't post itself online, warns about, quote, "temperatures in the eastern half of the country soaring above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 38 degrees Celsius, as regional electric grid operators try to avoid rotating blackouts," end quote. And why might the grid be under duress? Could it be years of energy policy decision-making by people determined to avoid building adequate, reliable generating capacity? In the newsletter, we also comment that normally we dismiss warnings about humans dying off from climate change as the fever dreams of overheated brains. And we mean overheated from internal combustion, not from external circumstances. But here's some fairly solid science about climate change bringing humans to the brink of extinction. However, please do not panic, because it happened in 1 million BC or thereabouts, when, absent malign human influence, the dang climate suddenly did something unprecedented, weird, and dangerous anyway. Now, of course, when it comes to prehistory, including paleoanthropology, there is a lot of guesswork. But this study used DNA from modern humans to argue reasonably convincingly that our remarkable lack of genetic diversity, including humans having 23 chromosomes, not the 24 of the other great apes, arose due to a genetic bottleneck, where possibly as few as 1,280 reproductive members of a precursor species that they failed to specify, that was probably Homo erectus, survived the, quote, "the transition into the middle Pleistocene, which saw the Earth cool significantly. Prolonged cold periods and the onset of glaciation, accompanied by severe droughts, likely led to widespread famine and scarcity of resources," end quote. No, not cold. Cold is good. We want cold. Make it colder. Nasty yellow face, go away. Then in the newsletter, we continued our Look It Up series with a look partly at the "you skeptics have all the money" accusation and partly at the claim that the world is not spending nearly enough on the climate crisis. Okay, how much money is being spent? You don't want to know. Seriously, you don't. But if you insist on knowing, you can look it up. Because courtesy of the Climate Policy Initiative, which is yet another multinational climate pressure group with apparently limitless resources that pay for nearly 200 staff members around the world, you can look up the annual tally of climate-related spending through their Global Landscape of Climate Finance. And the current total, that is current as of 2023, was $1.9 trillion. That's about the size of Canada's GDP. If the climate movement were a country, it would be big enough to be in the G7. And they have the gall to say that we have all the money and rich, powerful, sinister friends. Of course, at CDN, we're all for private giving, especially to us. But in the case of big climate, about half the funds come from the public sector, and of the private sector half, a lot of it is forced through regulation, so it's not really private. And look at this. The CPI generates the following flow diagram to explain where the money comes from and where it goes. Goodness gracious. If our finances looked like that, they'd throw a fit. So again, please throw some cash our way. Finally, in the newsletter, we discuss the topic of those cool, fluffy things in the sky again, because the last few years have been, on average, pretty warm, notwithstanding the winter and spring we just had, and this warmth has scientists puzzled, because their vaunted models didn't predict it, and they don't and can't attribute it to greenhouse gases. A likely explanation, as we have already pointed out, is the decline in global cloud cover since 2000. And now a new study by a NASA-led team looked not only at the total amount of cloud cover, but at the types and locations of the changes in coverage. And it seems that the zones where storm clouds form, which is mainly in the tropics and mid-latitudes, have actually been shrinking by 1.5 to 3% per decade since 2000. Again, nobody's sure why, least of all the computers. And what it means is uncertain, because if warming caused cloud cover to shrink, then yes, it's more evidence of a runaway process. But if cloud cover shrinking caused warming, it's more evidence that human influence is minimal. So, half a century into the panic and the yelling about settled science, we quite literally do not know whether greenhouse gases are a big contributor to warming or not important at all. Which is why we at CDN have our heads in the clouds trying to figure it out. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know it's always been hot in summer.